Please stand by. We are about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's IBM SEC Talk Radio conference call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, for opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Lillian Davis. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you very much, and I have the pleasure of welcoming you all to this call, too. And to introduce our speaker today, John Patrick, who you all have met several times if you've been a participant in this series for a while. He speaks to us each November because he knows how powerful the admin community is in terms of being a change agent and a technology adopter and a power user. And that's what he's all about, too. So we're really glad that he's with us and comes back to speak to us so often. John is the president of Attitude LLC and the former vice president of Internet Technology at IBM, where he worked for 38 years. During his career, first of all, we knew him as a financial guy. He helped start IBM's leasing business at the Credit Corp. And then he was a marketing executive and was involved in the launch of the ThinkPad. During the 90s, he got very curious about the Internet technology, and that really has turned into be a long-time hobby and career for him ever since. He's considered one of the leading Internet visionaries. He represents IBM at conferences around the world. Business 2.0 magazine named him as one of industry's most intriguing minds. Industry Week named him one of the top 30 people who drive innovation and provide the initial spark to economic growth. And Network World called him one of the most 25 most powerful people in networking. So, John, it's great to have you here today. We're really glad that you take the time to do this. And I just have to tell the audience, last year when John was on the call, I think his wife plugged in electric rollers or something like that, and the lights went out, and he did this in the dark. And the year before, my lights had gone out, so I feel like we should just sort of turn out the lights now. And be prepared for that. But yesterday when he called me to talk about this call, I could hear the wind blowing behind him and asked him where he was. And he told me he had just gotten off his motorcycle. He was at the grocery store. So that tells you that John is a renaissance man. He's a technologist who stops for groceries on the way home. So welcome, John. We're really glad to have you back.
Well, thank you, Lillian. Good morning.
Good morning.
Here.
Tell us, what's on your mind? What's the most interesting thing that you're thinking about these days in the technology world?
Well, I have to admit, I was just thinking about our discussion last year when I was in a hotel room in Oslo, Norway.
Yeah.
And as you said, my wife plugged in
something.
The place went dark, so I was sitting in the dark for an hour. Some people have been saying for years that I'm in the dark.
Not us.
But there's so much going on with the Internet. I think every year that we've talked, I've said we're at the beginning.
Right.
And I'm sticking to my story. It's still true. I don't know. I've been saying we're 5% of the way into it. Some people feel I should be saying it's 10%. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But it's a very small number. And it's in many ways right now, it feels like 1994. And by that I mean there's just a huge expansion of new ideas going on right now. Mm-hmm. New companies being formed, venture capital being invested, clever new things, all of which is built around the breadth and depth and power of the Internet. And it really is a very empowering set of things that's going on, offering new capabilities for all of us. Of course, at the same time, it's causing a lot of gas pain for many companies. Industry by industry, the Internet is continuing to ravage the business models that have been enjoyed for many years. And I think we're all familiar with the music industry and how they sort of sat on the sidelines when many of us knew exactly what was going to happen. And the industry, they just watched and waited and didn't act and eventually resorted to a legal strategy as opposed to a business and technical strategy. And they're still paying big time for that. The examples abound. Just yesterday, the new figures were released that showed that newspaper distribution, circulation, declined for the 19th year in a row,
mm-hmm.
By I think it was 2.6%. That's pretty significant when you think about it. If something goes down 2% a year, you know, it doesn't take that many years and it's down to zero. And, of course, we see that the cable companies, the satellite companies, the telephone companies, wireless companies, really going at it. And this is really encouraging to finally see some competition going on.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most exciting parts of this to me is the power grid. Electric companies around the world are really changing the way they operate, and many of you may have seen this, where you've had an option to get your electricity produced by one company, but delivered to you by a different company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In other words, they've separated the distribution and the marketing, and this has caused a lot of them to think about, well, there's some other things we could actually do with this electric grid we have out there. We could actually deliver high-speed internet service through the electrical grid. And so now there are hundreds of thousands of people who receive high-speed internet service right through the wall, so they can plug their PC in anywhere in the home, and they don't need a special Ethernet plug or jack or cabling. It comes right through the electrical system. And this is very exciting because it adds additional competition to the phone companies and the satellite and cable companies. And I think we all know that when you get competition really stoked up, the result is better service, lower price.
Right.
And that's certainly what I expect to see. So in a broad sense, I would say what we're seeing right now is an acceleration of the pervasiveness of the Internet and a deep encroachment of the Internet into every aspect of our life.
Mm-hmm.
Some people may feel, I don't know if that's good or not, but I think we have to think about it on balance and say there's actually a lot more good here than bad.
Mm-hmm.
Cognizant of the bad parts and take precautions and talk to our children and, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
We really can gain tremendously from the new technology.
Alan, the horses are out of the barn. We might as well figure out good ways to use it rather than worrying about trying to get it back the way that was in the old days.
Well, exactly. I mean, there are some people that would like to see it more regulated.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not in that camp.
No, I know. I can tell from your blog, but that's not your bias.
No. I mean, there are issues that need to be dealt with, but there are ways to deal with them through mm-hmm. technology and various approaches.
Mm-hmm.
And regulation is really the very last thing that we need.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if you were to ask me what is the one thing I'm a bit concerned about, it would be that right now the third world
mm-hmm.
Countries are beginning to feel that they're not really quite benefiting as much from the Internet as they should or as others do, and therefore they want to change the governance model of the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
Very specifically, what they want to do is to move the sort of central administration of the way the Internet works. They want to move that into the International Telecommunications Union, the
mm-hmm.
ITU,
mm-hmm.
Which is a part of the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as a technologist or as a user, that's a horrifying thought.
Mm-hmm.
When on the one hand we say that the Internet is really just beginning and the last 10 years were nothing compared to what we're going to see in the next 10 years, that's hardly the time to think about moving it into the UN,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, regulates and thinks in terms of decades,
mm-hmm.
When the technology is accelerating and more in terms of weeks,
mm-hmm.
months.
It's interesting to think about it as such a political issue, a global political issue, and that reminds me, of course, of Tom Friedman's book about The World is Flat. Have you read that?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's an excellent book.
What do you think about that? What that's related to what you were saying, but in a more positive way, in that countries that used to be more third world now have gained tremendous access to the world markets through their investments in technology.
Absolutely. I mean, I ran into a guy at a conference. I get over a lot of technology conferences. Mm-hmm. And I met this person, and he was the CEO of a company called something like programmersforhire.com or something. And it's a company in Romania that provides software developers over the Internet where you can outsource tasks to them for $8 an hour.
Wow.
And, you know, people get nervous about that, but on balance, it's a really good thing because it allows some very basic things to be done in a very cost-effective way, and that enables people to expand in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, there are definitely are geopolitical things going on, but I think the most important thing is that it's causing the economies of the world to be able to expand.
Right.
And you don't see it much in the news because there's so many political and other kinds of issues being covered, but the economy actually is very strong. Stronger than it's been in decades. And this is true, generally speaking, around the world. And the Internet is a major factor behind this because it has improved communications, improved efficiency in so many ways, allowed for things such as instant messaging and all forms of collaboration, this whole category of social computing, which I'm sure we'll get into talking about. And,
okay.
You know, all these things, add it all together, it's improved the ability of people to work together more efficiently.
From all over the world, really, a global statement.
All over the world, exactly.
Now, one of the articles by Friedman I mentioned to you in another note, had to do with the U.S. investment, United States investment in broadband connectivity, that we're not investing as much as some other countries are. Do you see that, or is that just a rhetoric?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's sort of the dark side of the American story right now, is that broadband rollout is way behind. The last ranking I saw put the U.S. at number 10, which is embarrassing, frankly, but it is changing, and this idea of broadband through the power grid, I think, will help.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe also that it's catching on. You know, people are starting to feel that, well, you know, maybe it is more expensive than it should be, and it's more than I'd really like to spend, but I think it's worthwhile for our family to have this.
Right.
And so it's growing rapidly. It's not the same as Europe or Asia, where it's significantly less expensive and significantly more pervasive than it is here. South Korea, for example, they're really doing some amazing things, in particular in the area of healthcare. Because of the pervasiveness of their internet connectivity, high speed internet, where you know looking at X-rays and MRIs and transferring medical records on an encrypted, secure basis is a routine thing.
Why do you think that happens in places like South Korea as opposed to the United States? Are there visionaries in high office that drive that, or
it's politics.
Yeah.
Countries outside of the U.S. view the Internet and broadband specifically as a way to put a shot in the arm of their economy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people in America feel the same way, but the monopolies that were created by the government for cable and telephone are really well entrenched.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of attorneys.
A lot of power. Lobbyists.
Yeah, and their goal is very clear. They want to protect themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, they argue that you know, they've made all this investment on behalf of consumers, and they should be able to recover that investment. Meanwhile, places like Philadelphia, for example,
right.
feel that if they were to have Wi-Fi for everybody in Philadelphia, in other words, all 135 square miles of Philadelphia blanketed with Wi-Fi, the political leaders there believe that that would be a very good thing.
Mm-hmm.
That would help their kids mm-hmm. have access that otherwise would not to good education, that companies would build and invest in Philadelphia, that conventions would come there because of pervasive connectivity, that the economy overall would become more connected, more effective. And even if they subsidize the cost, which they plan to do, for a lot of people that otherwise wouldn't have service at all, they think that's a really good thing. Meanwhile, the lobbyists in Washington are trying to get laws passed mm. to prevent mm-hmm. Municipalities from offering Wi-Fi.
Mm.
So it's an issue in America. But I'm the optimist, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that in spite of these things, progress is being made. And, you know, survey after survey shows that if people were stranded on an island out in the middle of nowhere and they could only have one thing, what would they want? I want the Internet. I want to be connected.
Yeah.
You know, can you imagine, like, not being connected?
I can't imagine you not being connected, John.
I can't either, but I mean, everybody on the call. I mean, how did we ever work before?
I know.
You know, faxes and, you know, we used to have stacks of mail.
Type letters with carbon paper. And
oh, yeah. I mean, it was... so being connected has a lot of benefits. And I think this data will show over time that, you know, it's actually helping the human species evolve in new ways. Positive.
Definitely change. Tell us some things that we can do on the Internet that we might not know about, or just some things that you've learned recently that can be done that you didn't know about that we might be able to use?
Well, every day there's something new going on with the Internet. I think that one of the least appreciated, or let me say it this way, that one of the most underestimated technologies continues to be blogging.
Right.
And I say that because it's really a lot more than meets the eye. Blogging is in part about, you know, a vanity thing, you know, where somebody mm-hmm. has their blog and they write their opinion and people read it. So that's one dimension of it, but that's just really a little tiny piece of it. Blogging is really a new way of creating content and distributing that content, syndicating it, archiving it, categorizing it, finding it. And the reason that this is so profound is that a web page, which is from a blog, in other words, a web page created through blogging technology, it looks just like any other web page. It, you know, it has words on it and links, and, you know, you read it, and, you know, it's a web page. But what's different about it is that web page has context.
Mm-hmm.
It has tags that are... Think of the web page, you flip it over on its back, there's a bunch of tags on the back.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those tags have to do with the format of the page. What does it look like? You know, it's Arial, Helvetica, Courier, 10-point blue background, centered tables, you know, all that kind of stuff. I call that just format. But there's another set of tags that give that page context. For example, a tag that is the name of the author of this page, a tag that has the date, a tag that has one or more categories that have to do with what this page is about, and then another tag that represents the title of this page, and then, of course, the content itself. And these simple five tags give these special web pages, these blog web pages, a context, which means that people can find them when you do a search.
Mm-hmm.
And they can be archived and categorized and saved in a much more effective way. So I think increasingly, when we go to Google or Yahoo or MSN or whatever our favorite search engine is, increasingly what we're going to be looking for is not 39 million hits on a word, but the blogs.
Mm-hmm.
what are the people in the know actually saying right now about this particular topic? It's hard to believe, but the web pages have become the legacy. You know, people used to say the mainframe is the legacy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not true anymore. You know, web documents have been thrown into the intranet now for more than 10 years. So the web has become the legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of stuff there that's really not all that useful. When you do a search on the IBM intranet, you know, I call it entering the data dumpster. There's millions of documents there, but what you really want to know is, you know, what's Lillian or Sally or Bill or Harry or, you know, what are people in the know on a particular topic? What do they have to say right now? What are they thinking? And so I think blogging is a really big deal. It can range on the one extreme to a person who is writing a blog for mom. You know, it's literally written by one person and read by one person. It might be a person on the school trip with the kids, and they're going to Washington, D.C., and this person volunteered to write the diary, you know, of what's going on the trip and post it at the end of each day in the hotel room, and then, you know, 100 parents that night read that blog to know what the kids we're doing. Then at the other extreme, there's a blog that gets, you know, large numbers of readers. I don't know what the largest one is of an individual, but right now my blog is getting 500,000 page views every month.
My goodness.
That's patrickweb.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, all serious, real publications like the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and, you know, every newspaper that knows which way is up, is making their newspaper available through a blog feed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the important thing about a blog feed is that you can subscribe to a blog without having to provide your email address. And this is a little bit subtle, but I think it's really, really important. Most of us feel like, I don't really want to give my email address to anybody that doesn't already have it.
Mm-hmm.
I've got enough of that. My inbox is full, and you know, I'm sort of interested in this newsletter, but I don't really want to subscribe because by giving my email address for this email newsletter, it's going to lead to a lot of other stuff that I really don't want. Whereas with a blog, you subscribe by clicking on that little orange symbol that you see on most content these days, a little orange RSS, or which stands for really simple syndication. Some websites, they use a little orange XML. It's the same thing. And when you click on that, your blog reader, which might be the Opera browser, for example, or it might be NewsGator, or it might be Blog Lines, or there's dozens of these blog readers that are available, it subscribes you. And now your blog reader, every hour or every day or however often you want, goes out and checks all the blogs that you're interested in, and if there's anything new, it pulls it in and puts it in a folder.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you've got the content you really want, not something that was being pushed out to you, but rather something that you pulled into your folders, and you know what it is, and you know where it is, and you know, it really changes the model. So I think that's a really subtle but powerful thing that's going on. And, of course, that leads to podcasting.
Right.
And podcasting is an audio version of a blog. This conversation that we're having right now, I believe, is being recorded.
Right.
So then I can put it on my website in a blog posting, and then people who subscribe to my blog will find that it automatically shows up in iTunes. And then when they synchronize their iPod or whatever kind of MP3 player they have with iTunes or whatever kind of music software they have, that conversation ends up on their MP3 player.
As an option to listen to? Or
As a song.
Oh.
You know, as a, it's called an episode. You know,
uh-huh.
It's a program.
Uh-huh.
And my vision of podcasting is for school teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Where at the end of the day, Mrs. Smith makes a little recording, you know, and here's what we talked about today. I want to remind you about the assignment for tonight, and you know, here's what we're going to do tomorrow. And the kids actually listen to Mrs. Smith on the school bus with their iPods. Wouldn't that be something?
That would be something.
Yeah, and then, you know, Mr. Jones hears kids in the hall talking about how cool Mrs. Smith's podcast is, and Mr. Jones says, maybe I better learn how to do this. And some teachers become really good at it, and they're like a disc jockey, and it becomes a new skill, and they engage more with the kids because, you know, we know what the kids are doing.
Right, they're using their language. Then.
Yeah, exactly. So blogging's a really big deal, and podcasting is an audio version of it. Video casting, obviously, is out there also, where, you know, anybody can have their own TV program. And so what the Internet is causing to happen is a breakdown of content into what we think of as micro-content. You know, it's not this big, huge article in the New York Times. It's, you know, it's a posting by Sally or Bill that's really relevant and that people trust. And people start to say, well, I just don't have time to read everything, but I know Bill, and Bill loves to read. He's a news junkie, and he writes in his blog about what he reads. So if I just read Bill's blog, I'll know what's going on. So I could go on for days about blogging.
Well, it's just so interesting to us. We do a newsletter for this community, and I feel like, and many others do too, that it's so last century to do a newsletter. And we need to do something like this, a blog and maybe even a podcast of things that people really need to know, and they can tune into only the things they want to know and need to know rather than having to drag through lots of stuff. So we're really tossing all of this around to try to figure out how we can make this work for us, too. It's very, very relevant to us.
Yeah, well, fortunately, there is blogging technology available in IBM, and of course there's loads of it outside of IBM.
Mm-hmm.
Irving Ladowski Berger has a very nice blog. And I knew that Irving would become a blogger because it's just Irving.
Him.
he's using TypePad. And if any of you want to experiment with blogging sort of, you know, on your own time outside of the world of IBM, just go to typepad.com, and within 5 minutes, you're a blogger. I mean, it's really simple.
Great. For those of you on the phone who are interested in doing this, I'm very interested in talking to you about that. I think it would really help us communicate more effectively among ourselves using this kind of technology. And I know that IBM has really encouraged people, just like they encouraged us to use the Internet, get on eBay, use instant messaging, and now there's been encouragement to blog just to get us used to that way of communicating with each other. And I was interested to see the 11 principles. Did you see those, John? The principles that IBM put out?
Yeah, I was sort of helping with that.
I bet you did. But I thought that was a great thing to do. A lot of companies don't blog, you know, don't get on the Internet unless it's business-related, and IBM has been very different about that.
I think it's important with regard to blogging that, you know, everybody doesn't have to be a blogger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really for people who want to, you know, people who love to communicate, who are good communicators, who take the extra time,
mm-hmm.
put links in what they write,
right,
that, you know, branch out to other places and make what they write more valuable. And for some people, it comes natural,
mm-hmm.
to communicate. And every department, you know, has somebody that knows everything that's going on, who's doing what the issues are, and they love to talk about it. Well, now they can blog about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's who it's for.
Right.
It might be the manager of a department. It might be a new employee,
mm-hmm.
at the bottom of the chain in a department. It doesn't matter what their rank is. What matters is, are they good communicators, and do they really want to do it? Do they love to communicate?
Are they verbal? I would love to do it, but for me it would be a full-time job. I can't do it fast enough to incorporate it into my life, you know, along with everything else, it seems to me.
There's another another subtlety about blogging is that there are people who are excellent communicators in what they write, but they wouldn't give a speech. If you put a gun to their head, they wouldn't get on a stage.
Mm-hmm.
They're either nervous, or they may have an impediment, or they just, just don't want to do it.
Had a bad experience.
But yet they're excellent in their written word.
Right.
So blogging, you know, brings that out and allows people to be tremendously effective communicators.
Yeah, we need more of those people.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about gadgets that you've seen. I know that you represent IBM at lots of conferences, and you wrote about the Demo Fall 2005 conference. Do you remember some of the gadgets that you saw there that you think would be interesting to us?
Oh, there's so many nifty things. I love the new iPod Video with that big 2.5-inch screen.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can watch TV shows and movies and look at pictures. And
I'm glad they're making the screens bigger. I never could see very much on my cell phone, little cell phones.
Yeah. And of course, cell phones are just proliferating. You could get a new one every week with something new. I got a new voice recorder the other day that I think is pretty slick. It's by a company called iRiver. And it's this little bitty thing about the size of a cigarette lighter. And it records. You just push the button. You know, it's like the old little tape players we had, only it's smaller. But what's neat about it is that the software that comes with it turns that recording into an MP3, which can then be put into your podcast. So it's a really simple way to do that. So that's one little nifty toy. What else? One of the things from a consumer perspective that's very exciting is the all-internet TV network. And this is going to be a really big deal. SBC is just about ready to roll out a 100% internet TV capability. Now, what that means is that in your home, wherever you are connected to the internet, you can have TV. So you can be in the kitchen recording a program that you're interested in and then watch it in a different room on a different TV. Or you can have 4 football games on the screen at the same time.
Heaven forbid.
I'm a football fan myself, but I know plenty of people.
Yeah, lots of people are.
But or 4 different anything.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at one program and you're kind of keeping your eye on another one, and then you flip back and forth between them. And I just saw in the news this morning that Comcast made a deal with some of the TV networks to allow people to just capture a show and watch it whenever they want. Now, of course, TiVo has enabled that, but there have been some limitations, and those limitations are going to unravel. And basically, we're going to be able to watch whatever we want to watch, whenever we want to watch it, wherever we want to watch it, on whatever kind of a device we want to watch it on. So a lot of change is happening in that regard. GPS is really getting affordable now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there used to be $1,000 for a really good one.
Now, and that's what's in the rental cars or in our cars that help us get around?
Yeah, or handheld ones.
Oh.
That allow you to go geocaching.
Oh, yeah.
And geocaching is one of the hobbies I'm most enthused about at the moment. You go to geocaching.com, and you put in a zip code. And after you really get into this, you learn to be put in a latitude and longitude and other things. But start with a zip code, and it might be of a place of where you live. You find that there are all these caches, C-A-C-H-E, cache, like as in a hidden treasure. And there's something hidden in the local park. And so you take your handheld GPS and you drive to the trailhead and you hike for however many miles and you follow the needle of the GPS and it takes you to where this cache is. And the cache typically is in a Tupperware container. An ammunition can,
uh-huh.
And it might be hidden in the roots of a tree, were under a rock, or a lot of different people get very creative in how they hide them. And you open it up, and inside there's a logbook, and you write in the logbook, you know, we were here. It's a great hike. And then you put in a trinket, and you take out a trinket. You can take a travel bug, which is like a dog tag with a serial number on it. And you go back to geocaching.com, and you record that you found this hidden treasure. You put in the serial number of this dog tag, and so thereby it moves from who owned it before to you. You're now the owner of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a goal that people ascribe. You know, this tag, I'd like to see it go to Hawaii.
Uh-huh.
And so you take it to Ohio or
mm-hmm.
wherever.
Mm-hmm.
And on the geocaching.com site, you can see the progress of this tag as it moves around the world.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in Norway, in August, I picked up a travel bug there. I took a little hike, and I found the hidden cache. It was a very difficult one to find,
mm-hmm.
up near Holmenkollen. If anybody knows that world-famous ski jump, it was near that. And it turns out that this travel bug that I brought home actually originated in Japan.
Wow.
And it was in Russia and Denmark and Norway, and I put it in a cache in Connecticut. So,
now, is all that in English?
It's all in English, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So there are lots of neat little devices available for handheld GPS. And then home automation, a lot of interesting things are
mm-hmm.
becoming available there to control the security of your home, to interact with your appliances, your TV, your music, so that you can distribute music throughout your home. Lots of neat little things you can do to automatically bring the shades down when the sun comes up, and open garage doors when your car goes by a certain spot. And
we have a lot of that in our Pervasive lab here in Austin. That's a place we always take visitors when they come through. For those of you on the phone, if you're in Austin, make sure you go look at that technology. We have a smart kitchen and a smart living room and a smart everything in one of the labs here. See a lot of that going on. For those of you who joined late, I'm speaking with John Patrick, who is interested in and is an expert on the Internet, and we're talking about his experiences and his uses of technology and getting us excited about doing some of the same things. We're going to stop for questions in a few minutes, so if you have some, just save them up, and we'll stop in about 5 minutes. I have to say, John, the blogs that you write on geocaching are some of my favorite ones. I always enjoy reading about that, but I didn't realize the whole deal about the bugs, the things that you pick up and take with you and send around the world. It's sort of an interesting way, again, of what you were talking about earlier, the collaboration among strangers, people who don't know each other but have formed this worldwide network of
right.
treasure hunting. How does a cache get started? Can you just go out and set one up and then register it?
Exactly. They have very strict guidelines for how this is done, and there's quite a culture behind this, sort of like when the Internet started. You know,
yeah.
A certain netiquette associated with it, and the same is true for geocaching. My wife and I just placed one in August here in Connecticut, and every time somebody visits it, they go to geocaching.com and they post the fact that they were there, and then the owner of that cache gets an email. And so you can see, you know, who visits it, where they were from, and what they did, and the comments they made about it, and if it was disturbed in some way or someone wasn't careful in rehiding it, you're alerted to that, and you run over there and take care of it. A related thing that's going on, it's called benchmarking.
Hmm.
And benchmarking is similar but a little different. The U.S. Geodetic Survey placed metallic markers in permanent places, like in a piece of rock, a big rock, you know, that's not going to move, or in many cases in a railroad bridge. And there's 750,000 of these things in the United States. all over the place, and they're all in a database. And you can go through geocaching.com, you can put in your zip code, and it will list all of these benchmarks that are near where you live. And then you go find them and go back to the site and record the fact that you have found it. So if you look on my homepage at patrickwebb.com, I keep a little, there's a little indicator there, and it tells you how many benchmarks and how many geocaches as of this moment I've found. And I'm just an amateur at this. I found, you know, less than 100, but which is a lot more than many people, but there are some that have found thousands.
Really?
So that's quite an interesting thing. One other thing I wanted to mention before we get into questions, sort of related to blogging, I was describing how the blog is different because it has context. It has these tags that reflect what it's about. This same concept is really the biggest thing changing the Internet right now, and it's happening through blogging, it's happening through music, and it's happening through pictures. For example, iTunes is an example of this micro-content. In other words, it's a track of music, and associated with that track of music, which might be typically, you know, a couple minutes long. Associated with that track is, of course, the name of it. What album is it part of? Who is the artist? How long is it? What format is it in? What genre is it? Is it rock or classical or opera or whatever? And also a tag for how many stars do you give it? How many stars do you give it, right? So you're adding context to that little piece of music. And all those tags now reflect the something that you can search. So you go into iTunes, which is my favorite, but there's lots of software available for music, and you can search by how many stars does it have. I just feel like I want to just listen to the one-star stuff today. Or a particular genre, or only songs of a certain length, etc. So you can create your own collection of music. So an album, when you think about it, is really an ancient term. You know, an album, what is an album of music? An album of music consists of a hit and then some so-so stuff and a couple real clunkers, you know, that nobody really likes, but the producers of the music put it on there because they want to get some money for it, and they know you'll buy the album because you wanted the hit.
Right.
And you'll pay $18.98 for it. Well, those days are over. Now you pay 99 cents, and you just buy the ones you like. In pictures, the same thing is happening. We're all taking lots of digital pictures. I have two grandchildren, and we have 10 million pictures. And so what do you do with these pictures? Well, you put them on your PC, of course, and you may choose to print them out, but you also provide tags. So you have, maybe it's their name, or maybe it's a birthday, or, you know, Christmas 05, or, you know, whatever, you can add all these tags. Now, people are using Flickr, F-L-I-C-K-R, no E in it, Flickr.com, and they take their pictures from their PC, and they drag and drop them into a little folder at Flickr, and it uploads them to Flickr.com. And you can decide whether you want these pictures to be family only, private only for a few certain friends, or public. Most of the pictures that people take, they make public, believe it or not. And they put them on the Internet, and then somebody else can go look at a picture and add their own tags. So you take a picture, let's say, of IBM headquarters in Somers, New York, you know, the pyramid-shaped buildings. And you take a picture and you upload it and you put a tag, IBM. Somebody is looking around Flickr.com and they see this picture. And they say, oh, that building was designed by I.M. Pei. So they put a tag, add a tag for I.M. Pei. And they add another tag for architect. And somebody else adds a tag, Somers, New York. And so you have all this context being built up, grassroots. And this is an amazing thing. And now, when people are looking for something, they're more likely to find something if there's more tags than if there are less tags. So, because they can find it on their own terms. So this is dramatically changing the amount of music, pictures, words, broadcasts, interviews, content of all kinds. It's just exploding.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, the technology is making it possible for this to be affordable. And, you know, we're taking Google for granted, but it's changing the world.
It is.
The ability to find something. You know, if I have a problem with my ThinkPad or some software issue, I don't go to ibm.com/support. I'll never find it there. I just Google, and I find it because somebody else had the same problem, and they blogged about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or it might be on, you know, xyz.com. They might have posted something because of their experience. So this is a really good thing. Somebody told me the other day that the average IQ has gone up by 100 points because of Google.
Really? Just the ability to do research quickly and find things that you're looking for?
Exactly.
Hmm.
It's making all of us smarter.
That's good to hear. And Flickr.com sounds very fascinating. I had not heard of that and definitely want to look at that when we finish here. Let's stop and see if there are questions. Cindy, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Would you tell people how to ask John a question?
Sure. Today's question and answer session will be held electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone phone. A voice prompt on your phone line will indicate when your line is open. If you do find that your question has been answered and would like to remove yourself from the queue, please press star 2. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. As a reminder, a voice prompt on your phone will indicate when your line is open, and we do ask that you please state your name and location before posing your question. Once again, that's star 1 for questions and star 2 to remove yourself. We'll pause for a moment to assemble the roster.
Wow, that sounded complicated.
Gosh, I know it. I told her sometimes it's hard to know when we're being called upon.
Right.
And we'll take our first question from...
Hi.
Go ahead.
This is Hi, Lillian. This is Sue Casey.
Hi, Sue.
And this has just been truly enlightening. And my question really, though, is for someone that is not very technically literate, I guess, and there's so much information out there, I find myself ignoring all of it because it's so overwhelming, but you've kind of really spurred an interest. You know, that's the easiest way to do it, put my head in the sand and ignore it. But for a novice, I guess, what's your advice on where to go to find out what's new and what all this technology means and how it can help, I guess, us do business or...
Raise kids. Sue's got kids, too.
Yeah,
she's got
right. Kids.
Well, yeah, it's a very fair question. You know, what I tell CEOs at conferences that I speak to them at, offer the same advice to anybody that asks that question, is just start clicking. You know, pick something. Lillian said raise kids. You know, Google raise kids, and you find some really interesting things. And what I recommend is experiment with making your searches a little more sophisticated. In other words, if you just type in kids, you're going to get, you know, 499 million hits.
Mm-hmm.
But string a set of words together and look at the kinds of things that you see, and then you can click, with Google, you can click on the advanced button, and you can put some words that you want not included. So in other words, you want to search all of the web for web pages that contain the following three or four words, but don't contain the following three or four words. And then, you know, that way you can narrow things down to get closer to what it is that you're looking for. So that's the first point I would make is about search, is don't be frustrated by getting, you know, a billion hits. Practice with, you know, includes this but not that, and you'll be amazed how much difference it makes. Secondly, start reading some blogs. There's only 20 million of them. But you can go to blogsearch.google.com.
Is that one word, blog search?
Blog search. It's one word, blogsearch.google.com, and enter Raise Kids. And you will only get matches of things that are coming from blogs. Now, some people say, well, how do I know these bloggers aren't, you know, how do I know that they know what they're talking about? And my answer to that is it's very similar to go to Barnes & Noble or your favorite bookstore or Amazon and look for books about raising kids, and you'll find 300 books at the Barnes & Noble store. How do you know they know what they're talking about? Well, you don't. So you pick one up and you kind of look at it. You look at the back cover. And let's take I wrote a book called Net Attitude. So you look at Net Attitude. It's not about raising children. It's about all this kind of stuff we're talking about. But, you know, it's just John Patrick. And you look at it and you say, well, I never heard of John Patrick. I have no idea if he knows what he's talking about. Then you turn the book to the back cover. And on the back cover, there's a blurb there from Lou Dobbs. And Lou says, you know, this guy really knows what he's talking about. You really ought to read this book. And then, you know, three or four or five other, you know, sort of famous people there. So you say to yourself, well, I never heard of John Patrick, but I have heard of Lou Dobbs. And these other people, if they say this is a good book, it must be a good book. So blogs, it's the same thing. You can go to technorati.com. It's T-E-C-H-N-O-R-A-T-I, technorati.com, and you can do a search there of the blogs, and it will show you how many people are reading them. So that's one indication of whether a blog is any good. If lots of people are reading it, that it's likely that the person has some staying power where they have something to say. And then, you know, you get yourself a blog reader. I use the Opera browser. It has a blog reader built into it, but there are many, you know, just Google blog readers. They're often called aggregators is a buzzword term that is used to describe a blog reader. And it's a piece of software, kind of like a browser. And it subscribe to some blogs, and, you know, and then when you decide you're bored with somebody, you know, unsubscribe. And good bloggers will point to other people's blogs. And so I guess the answer is, how do you figure out what's going on, is you just have to take a little time and, you know, pick a time. You know, the Thursday night at 9 o'clock, I'm going to spend 30 minutes just, you know, surfing around and figuring out what's there and reading it.
And I'll put in a plug for John's blog. Is where I started with this and feel like I know him personally because I read that almost every day or every time he sends one out. So I was just looking at there was an article on W3 yesterday about blogging. It's called Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Blog? And it says the total number of weblogs tracked by Technorati has doubled every 5 months for the past 3 years. So huge database at Technorati.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of junk out there, but there's a lot of good quality stuff too.
Are there other questions, Cindy?
As a reminder, that's star one to ask your question. And we'll take our next question from
Hello, John. This is Julie Verone in Armonk.
Hi, Julie.
Hi there. I'd like you to talk a little bit more about this, all the internet on the TV network. I mean, how is that going to, is that here with us now?
Yes, actually it is. There are a number of websites that offer TV today, but the big change is coming from SBC. They're going to be the leader in this, I think.
SBC.
Yeah, SBC. Right.
Okay.
They have, I think, 50 million. They're connected to 50 million homes in America. Mm-hmm. They're a really 800-pound gorilla, and the cable companies and satellite companies, they don't like this at all.
I bet.
You can't deliver all this stuff through the Internet. But technically, it's not a big deal. SBC is rolling out fiber optic cable into the neighborhoods of America, and fiber optic cable will deliver 20 to 25 million bits per second into the home. And what that means is that single connection to the Internet into your home will allow you to do all the TV stuff I was mentioning, also provide as many telephone lines as you want. It becomes your sole connection to the outside world and provides everything.
So, John, you would be paying SBC then on a monthly charge or something? Is that what?
Exactly. And they own Singular also for wireless. So, you know, I'm not recommending SBC necessarily. What I'm saying is that the Internet is coming to our home in a much different way than just, you know, what we have today. And it's going to be an option to be your everything, wireless, entertainment, recording of that entertainment, you know, on-demand entertainment, you know, whatever you want to watch, whenever you want to watch it, plus, of course, high-speed Internet, plus telephony service, and you'll be able to use your cell phone to control this. So you'll be able to go on your cell phone, search through the TV listings at Yahoo, and instruct your digital video recorder to record a certain thing.
Wow.
And then when you get home, you watch it. Or, of course, you'll be able to watch it on your cell phone. Yeah. On the one hand, it's overwhelming, but I think it's really important to recognize that we are being empowered by all this stuff. That doesn't mean we have to use it all. It's just like instant messaging. You know, some people feel like they're tethered to the same time, and they, you know, that they can't let go. And I've been saying, and I started this in 1997, instant messenger in IBM, and I always said it's okay to turn it off. You know, it's okay to click the button that says I'm away. You know, I'm on deadline, or I'm behind closed doors with someone, or you know, I just want to be by myself for the next X amount of time. That's okay. Assert yourself.
Thank you, John.
Sure.
I think we have time for one more question, Cindy, if there is one.
We have no other questions at this time, Ms. Davis.
Okay, I think people are looking at their watches, John, but let me just thank you again for being here. As Sue said, every time you come, it just means so much to us and opens doors that we don't always take the time to look through, and really look forward to hearing your report next November and telling us what we need to know. And really, you know, so many of us are raising children or grandchildren or whatever, and just trying to imagine what their world is going to be like. I think your talk with us each year helps us better understand that, and helps us be better employees and managers as well. So really appreciate your being here, and keep on doing what you're doing for us. You're a great ambassador for IBM, and we're proud to know you.
Well, thank you very much. It's really a pleasure. By the way, with regard to kids, if you go to patrickwebb.com, I have my own little search box on the left-hand side. Type in the word kids, and you'll find a number of stories there about Extreme Blue and kids in general.
Great.
Might be a place to start.
Patrickwebb.com. Right. And thanks to everybody here joining us today. Our next time together will be in December, and that's the time of the year that we traditionally have a kind of a learning session. We ask some of our colleagues to tell us about a learning program that they put together, and that's what we will be doing the second Tuesday in December. So I hope you will all join us for the final program of this year. Amazing that it is. Thanks again, John, and best wishes to you.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. That does conclude today's IBM call. You may disconnect at this time.